Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 321 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host, as usual. Today, my guest is Ryan Payton. Now, Ryan serves as the director of the Colorado Attorney Mentoring Program, as well as their Legal Incubator Program. I think it's Legal Entrepreneur Incubator. I think I need to get all those words in one sentence. In the great state of Colorado. She is a former litigator, as she'd like to say, a reformed attorney, and she has now lent her skills as an advocate for professionalism, diversity, and equity in the legal field, particularly through her role as the director of these two programs. So we talk wide range of subjects, my usual rant about bar associations, although I have to admit things are improving on those areas as far as I can tell from the outside. So I'm not quite as annoying about that in this episode. We talk about the partnership that she's developing with these programs in the commercial world outside of the association. So really a fascinating discussion. She's delightful, and I hope you enjoyed as much as I did. So without any further delay, here is Ryan Payton. Ryan Payton, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I'm very happy to have you on the program today, Ryan. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure. I consider myself a recovering lawyer. I spent about 10 years in civil litigation, mostly doing family law, some employment law, and civil rights law. And so after about a decade, I really burnt out as a litigator and thought about, you know, what comes next, and took a look around the profession and realized that as much as I, you know, was glad to be practicing law in some ways, there were a lot of pain points in the profession that, you know, I could be helping with. So I made the transition to working with the Colorado Attorney Mentoring Program and the Legal Entrepreneurs for Justice Project, both offices which I run now today, and have been doing that for the last 6 years.
Well, that's were you from Colorado? Were you in Colorado at the time, or were you drawn to Colorado for this challenge?
I was in Colorado at the time. I went to law school in Minnesota, but then relocated to Denver shortly thereafter and have been practicing here in Denver for that duration.
Okay. And what attracted you to the legal entrepreneurship program and the mentoring program there? Was there something you said you were looking to help lawyers relieve some of the pain points they were experiencing? That, you know, is that the main focus of why you made the transition?
That is a major focus. Being 10 years into practice, I looked back on my career and realized that I came out of law school having no idea what I was doing and really lacking in the support and professional network and mentors to help me find my place. And part of why I had burned out as a litigator was because I was doing work that I didn't want to be doing, but felt like I had to be doing. And so I was drawn to the mentoring program and to Legal Entrepreneurs for Justice because what those programs really focus on is giving folks that support that they need to find, we always say, to find their people, their place, and their purpose in the profession. And because that's something I felt like I was lacking, I really was inspired to jump in and try to lead that movement going forward.
Well, if you listen to this program long enough, you've heard me hop on my soapbox to say that, you know, I think law schools border on legal malpractice in churning out attorneys who don't really know what they want to do, where they want to work, how a law firm operates, or how really to be an attorney. You did a great job of teaching you how to think like an attorney and how to do research, but there's an awful lot missing there that is, you know, supposedly addressed by bar associations with programs such as your own, and then the private enterprise. And it's my opinion, it may be different where you are, but it's my opinion that it's the private enterprises that are doing a better job of filling that need. How do you see that?
I would agree to a certain extent. I don't want to beat up on law schools. I think that they're sort of in a position where they've painted themselves into a corner with respect to how their business model operates. They are reliant on students to come in and pass the bar exam and get jobs and be employed. And so as long as that is the business model, they can only really teach toward that outcome, which is helping people pass the bar exam. And as we all know, the bar exam, you know, is probably not the best indicator of whether someone is ready for practice. And so as long as that's the business model of law schools, I think their ability to teach the practical experiential aspects of law practice are limited. And so I think that has fallen to the private sector. It has fallen to community organizations and the bar associations. But even there's only so much folks can do, because one of the other things that happens in law schools is that not only are they not providing the practical experiential based learning that is necessary, but they're giving students, I think, a sense of there's only one way or limited ways to practice law. The practice law only looks like X. And if you don't want to do that, or you don't end up doing that, I think a lot of law students, as they're transitioning into practice, feel a lack of belonging. They feel like they don't belong in this profession because they didn't end up where their law school told them they should.
Exactly. And, you know, nowhere was that more evident than first week of law school, 1L, when I remember they asked, what area of law do you want to practice? And I'm like, geez, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, it's okay to have no idea right now, but by the end of the semester, you better have an idea. That's all you get. You get 3 months to figure it out. And then, as you said, their model is you pass the bar, you become an associate at a medium to large firm, you learn the business, and there you go. And I think that doesn't serve the vast majority of people who... I have a solution, by the way, just so that you know. That? So you know, I'm not just on my soapbox yelling into the wind. I believe that law schools should offer a track of classes, just like you have a track of classes on criminal law, a track of classes on litigation, you know, public service, whatever it may be. I think every school should have a track of classes that deals with law firm operations and administration. That teaches you nothing but how to work in and run and administer an office. And people could take as many of those classes as they want or choose. And then I think the second part of the solution is the guidance counselor should really be working to find out what it is that will excite you and steer you in that direction. To me, that's the solution. So when I become the czar of legal education, I'll implement that.
Well, I think the second part of what you said that was so important, especially with the helping students to figure out what they want. Because to your point, there's obviously a lot of discussion of what practice area do you want to go into, but not a lot of support in really helping people to find their passion. And then giving them permission to change their mind as well. I remember what I wanted to do as a 1L was mergers and acquisitions. And I never ended up anywhere near that in my own practice. And so, you know, to have that permission to change your mind and to reinforce sort of the nimbleness of what a law degree is, and giving people that permission and opportunity to shift course, to try things on, and to really figure out what motivates them.
You know, I've spoken to literally hundreds, if not through speaking engagements, thousands of attorneys on this subject. And I bet I can count on one hand, maybe one and a half hand, the number of attorneys who said to me, I knew I wanted to be a family law lawyer when I went to law school. That's exactly what I positioned myself for, and that's what I am. You know,
right.
Everybody yeah. else says, I had no idea I was going to get into maritime law. I'm from Kansas. You know? But here I am practicing maritime law, or some other variation of that story.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the other thing about law school is that it really, I think, encourages people to go right from undergrad into law school, where when we see folks who come to law school as second, sometimes third careers, or having taken time off to do something else between undergrad and law school, those folks, you know, tend to have better outcomes because they have a better sense of who they are and what they want to do. They have a little bit more world experience. And so they're able to identify their needs and wants as a professional a little bit easier than I think the folks who go straight through from undergrad to law school. Yeah.
Well, I think that's certainly an advantage. I will tell you my own personal experience. I didn't go to law school until my late 40s. Law was my fourth career. I thought I'd made all the mistakes. I thought I'd learned all I needed to learn about business and how to run a business. And little did I know, there was a whole new set of mistakes for me to make, which I promptly did.
sure.
And then some. So now we all then come around to, I'm going to call them progressive bar associations, because not all bar associations are equal on the state level, and certainly not at the local level. Some do a better job in this respect. And I know from doing the background research in Colorado that this has been an important part of the Colorado Bar's mission to serve principally new young attorneys, and as evidenced by the programs that you run. Tell me about their commitment to doing so.
Absolutely. I think every bar association in the country, especially after the pandemic, has had to have a sort of an internal conversation about sustainability and relevance. And what does the next generation of lawyer want and need in a professional association? And so when you talk to those next generation lawyers, this is what they're telling you. They want the practical learning. They want mentorship. They want community engagement. They still see those elements of the bar association as critically important to their professional growth. They just want to do it in a different way than their counterparts from other generations. And so I think the Colorado Bar has taken the position that for its own sustainability, it needs to be meeting the needs of the next generation of lawyer.
I've watched with amusement, not the right word, but I've watched with interest some of the spirited conversations in our own locale around here about state bar associations in Maryland and Virginia and in DC. And you're right. Even seasoned veteran attorneys are questioning, what do they want from their association? Is it just an opportunity to serve and gain recognition and hold office and, you know, be recognized by your peers? Or does it have a larger purpose to the legal community and really to the public? And I think those conversations are taking place.
Yes, and they have to. They have to. I mean, law has to change as a profession. I know that with the pandemic, we as lawyers went kicking and screaming into a lot of the shifts that had to happen around how we work and how we do our jobs. But I think ultimately it was a good thing, because the law has to shift. The profession has to shift. It has to meet the needs of modern clients. It has to meet the needs of modern lawyers. And so bar associations, I think, are a key component in that, because as the people who set the tone and the culture of a local legal community, the bar association has to be at the front end of having those conversations and really sorting through their own identity crisis as leaders of the profession.
And well, there's a lot of inertia to overcome, though, as well, because of that. Because, you know, associations, I think, for a long time have lagged behind the changes in their constituent, or the changes that their constituents are facing. And so they've been a little bit behind the times. And I think now, as a result of the pandemic and other events, that the need to catch up and be reflective of society at large is ever more critical. Otherwise, you know, associations aren't going to survive going forward.
Absolutely. One of the ways we phrase that out here in Colorado is that it's like turning a tanker, not a jet ski. And to turn a tanker takes a long time and a lot of effort. And the work that we're trying to do here is to add a couple more tugboats to that tanker to try to push it a little bit faster for exactly the reasons that you've articulated.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. I mean, I think the danger is that you don't want the tanker to sink while the little tugboat's trying to move it around.
Right.
You know, and you know, it is never more present or obvious, I think, than when we talk about technology, in my humble opinion. And we talk about technology on this program a lot, but the pace at which technology is accelerating continues to astound everyone. And I mean, who would have thought 5 years ago that the vast majority of our interactions with the court, with other attorneys, and with our clients would be video-based? Mm-hmm. I mean, we just didn't think of that. And if law schools and bar associations don't recognize something has fundamentally changed such as that, that tanker is going to sink while the little tugboat's trying to move it around, in my humble opinion.
If you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients. You know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you in part by the net profit CFO, Ryan Kimler. If that name sounds familiar, you might remember him as being a guest on episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, where we talked about his new company and how they can help you drive profit to your bottom line. I was so enamored by what Ryan had to say that I actually became a client. I called him up and said, I'm ready to take advantage of your expertise. And that's exactly what happened. So I'm now a very happy customer or client of the Net Profit CFO. But I'm also very pleased to welcome them as a sponsor to the show. So do you want to enjoy higher net profits without working longer or harder? As you learned on that previous episode, with just 9 simple numbers, Ryan will help you drive more profit to your bottom line, and he won't confuse you with all the details. If you want to increase your net profit, but don't like getting deep into the numbers, I highly recommend that you connect with Ryan. You can do that by going to netprofitcfo.com and download the Financial Clarity Dashboard. It's a great tool for getting the big picture of your financials. So, tell us then a little bit about what the Attorney Mentoring Program, Colorado Attorney Mentoring Program, which conveniently works into the acronym CAMP. Tell me a little bit about what they do and you as director, what you're trying to provide your constituents.
Absolutely. So despite the name of just being the Attorney Mentoring Program, we do so much more than just mentoring. Of course, that's a core component of what we do. This is a voluntary program in Colorado where every Colorado lawyer, whether you're brand new to practice or, you know, at any point in your practice, if you're seeking mentorship, we have a bank of over 1,000 mentors who we have vetted and worked with over the years available to lawyers to pair them up in individual one-on-one mentoring pairs or in group mentoring settings, in order to provide them with that peer-to-peer and that professional support. So that's one piece mm-hmm. of the puzzle of what we do. And like I said, we work with lawyers across their career spectrum. We have mentees who are thinking about retirement and looking for mentors in the transition out of practice, just as we have folks who are looking for mentors in the transition into practice. In addition, though, to that standard kind of mentoring program, we also do a lot in the context of professionalism, civility, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and also lawyer well-being. So with respect to professionalism and civility, we talk a lot, we do workshops on professional identity development and really helping lawyers, like we were talking about earlier, who have come out of law school not knowing who they are, not knowing what they want, trying to make major decisions about their life and their professional pathway. We do workshops with them to uncover their own professional identity so that they can make those decisions in a way that's going to support them more holistically as they go forward into their career. In the diversity, equity, and inclusion realm, we give trainings and presentations and education to law firms and legal organizations around all of the issues that are impacting inclusion and belonging in the profession. And then in well-being, we run the Colorado Lawyer Well-Being Recognition Program, which is a unique program that recognizes legal employers who have prioritized well-being in their workplaces, and providing them with tools, education, resources, as well as peer-to-peer community support in creating or building or sustaining well-being initiatives within their legal workplaces. So we do all of that on top of running Legal Entrepreneurs for Justice, which is our lawyer incubator here in Colorado, where we teach lawyers how to build socially conscious law practices.
All right. Well, so you cover a great deal more than just mentoring, as you said. So it's much more of a holistic approach. So therefore, I think you ought to change the name. I think it should be the Colorado Holistic Attorney Mentoring Program. So you are all would be CHAMPS.
I love that. I love the CHAMP acronym.
There you go.
Yes, and we are working on changing the name to better represent everything that we do. But I love CHAMP. I'm going to have to write that down.
There you go. So again, one of the things that people are sick of hearing me yak about, I think, is the lack of civility in the legal space. And it always surprised me and somewhat saddened me that I saw some of the worst behavior by attorneys who, frankly, in a profession that supposedly puts high value on the rule of law and decorum within the courtroom, and relationships between attorneys. And yet I thought just some really atrocious behavior. I'm hoping that continues to change with programs like that. I remember one of my mentors, family member who is a well-known attorney here in the Washington, D.C. area, said, look, if you at the end of the day, look at yourself and know that you behaved as a gentleman to everyone in the legal field, then that's going to make up for a lot of shortcomings that you might have elsewhere. They might say, he may not be much of an attorney, but he's a hell of a guy and a great gentleman. And that will get you a long way in the practice. And I think there's some truth to that. All the skills in the world will not overcome bad behavior.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. And that's one of the things we talk about so often in our program is that this is, you know, even though Colorado is a large state, Denver is a big city, this is a small legal community. And, you know, who you are and your reputation means everything.
Yeah.
And your ability to do well by your client actually does depend on your reputation and how you treat other people. And you know, your legal acumen is important, but ultimately who you are is going to impact that outcome for your client more than anything.
So tell me more about then the incubator program, because I think these are ventures that are getting more and more traction around the country, and which is really great. I don't think they're large enough. I think you could probably quadruple, or if not 10x, the size of these programs and still find a community to serve. But tell me a little bit about what your objectives are in the incubator program and how you go about satisfying that.
Sure. So our incubator program was started by one of our Supreme Court justices, Justice Melissa Hart, who was a longtime professor at the University of Colorado School of Law. And during her sabbatical, the professor, she went out on the road and around the country to look at how legal incubators were working and to look at the different models and figure out what might be the best fit for us here in Colorado. And ultimately, we landed on the model that we have today through LEJ, which is Legal Entrepreneurs for Justice. And what our goal is to create lawyers who have solo small firm practices that are focused on doing socially conscious work. And what we mean by that is we ask these folks to focus on meeting the needs of clients that are in the middle of that justice gap, So the clients who make, you know, too much money to qualify for legal aid, but aren't at the place where they're going to want or can afford to work with lawyers through traditional means. So high retainers, high billable hours. And we teach them how to build a business, something that they don't learn in law school. So they get a mini MBA through the program. So we teach them how to build a business, but then we teach them how to create pricing models that are reflective of the clients that they're serving. So we have a rule that no one in our incubator can bill by the hour. There are no billable hours here. And so everybody works through flat fee, subscription services, and other ways of generating revenue while doing work that empowers clients to be a part of their cases. So many of our cohort members don't do traditional litigation. They do a lot of unbundled type of work. They do a lot of do-it-yourself type of work. They spend a lot of time advising clients, giving them case analyses, and doing bits and pieces of their cases so that those clients are empowered to do most of the work themselves. And that makes it a more affordable representation.
And how long would a incubator, participant, how long would they be in the program?
So it's a 12 to 18 month program. Okay. The 12 months, that's the main part of the program where we do all of our training and help them to build their law firm. And then they can stay for an additional 6 months if they wish to in a mastermind program where we have prior participants and cohort members come back in a peer-to-peer mentoring group. And we do that in conjunction with the Chicago Bar Foundation's Justice Entrepreneurs Project, which is the legal incubator in Chicago.
And so then after that 18 months, is there any kind of long-term follow-up or is there an aftercare program for the people who have been through the incubator program?
Many of those folks come back and become our trainers and mentors in the program. And then what we're trying to do is build a community. And so for the folks who have graduated through the program, they're now a part of the LEJ community where, you know, they're able to get referrals and maintain contact with their cohort members and others. And ultimately, we're trying to build a little army of lawyers out here in Colorado who are doing this work.
And so how long has this been both the mentoring program and the incubator program? How long have they been in existence?
The mentoring program has been in existence since 2011, and the incubator has been in existence since 2019.
Okay. And on the horizon, what's your big lofty goal? I mean, do you have, you know, a really bright, shiny object out there that you'd really like to see one or both of these programs accomplish, or just gaining wider traction and more recognition and more success?
Certainly the latter. I mean, we're always wanting to grow and make sure that we're bringing in as many people as possible and engaging them in this work. But ultimately, I'd like to see this office become the office of inclusive or of professional excellence for the Colorado legal community, that this is the place where people can come to find that mentoring, to get that education, that practical training. I would like to build out a part of the office where we have on-call people who can work with lawyers who are hanging a shingle, setting up their own shop so that they have an expert that they can reach out to with questions, concerns, and to get the information they need to be successful. And ultimately to be, you know, that one-stop shop where everybody can come and get what they need in terms of professional development support.
And how about counseling in technology? Is that a component either now or hopefully in the future where you can help? Because lots of attorneys, one of the biggest complaints I get, I can't sort out what's out there and it's changing every minute. I need somebody to walk me through this process or help me get set up.
Yes. So through the incubator, technology is a huge component of our curriculum. We have partnerships with a number of legal tech providers.
That was going to be my next question. Yep. You have a partnership with the commercial and public companies.
We do. And so the cohort members are eligible to receive free or low cost access to those programs while they're in the incubator program. And so they have access to that. They try different ones on, figure out what works best for them. And so we have that, and then we utilize a part of our curriculum to not only give them access to those resources, but then to teach them how to use technology in process mapping, in the client experience.
Yeah.
to make their practices more friendly to clients who want to utilize that technology. And then in terms of mentoring, we provide a number of, you know, people throw around the term reverse mentoring, but I think everybody can benefit from this technology mentoring. But we have a technology aspect to all of our mentoring plans so that people are asking those questions and considering that. And I hope as we think about building out the office, that those folks who will be here to provide that support to the solos who are building their practices, that they will have that resource as well to be able to talk about technology, point people in the right directions, and potentially build additional partnerships.
And lastly, what is the role of wellness in terms of the mentoring program, this more global mentoring program that you spoke of? Because we all know that's a really critical component of lawyer health and by extension, you know, the productivity of a law firm.
Yeah, we really do see well-being as a core component in professionalism, that lawyers who are well can be more professional, more civil. All of the things that we were talking about earlier, you know, the toxicity that exists in the profession, my argument is that's because people are miserable and they're unhappy with the work that they're doing. They're burnt out. They go home drained every day. They, you know, they turn to self-medication and alcohol, drugs, whatever it may be. And so they're miserable. And when you're miserable, it's hard to be nice. And so if we can help people to be well, ultimately that helps to solve our professionalism problem. I also think it helps us to be more innovative as practitioners and as professionals, that when we are so burnt out and can only focus on what's right in front of our face, it's difficult to incorporate new technologies, to think about practicing law in a different way, to be more client-centered. We're surviving. And so if we can get out of that survival brain and be more in a place where we can be creative and innovative, that's ultimately going to serve us and it's going to serve our clients as well. And that all comes back down to well-being and feeling good about ourselves and being healthy.
Well, I think I would expect nothing less from an organization located there on the Front Range in God's country. So if you weren't incorporating wellness into the program, I would kind of wonder a little bit.
Yeah. Yes.
But Ryan, tell our audience, what's the best way for them to reach out to you if they want to follow up or get more information about the mentoring program and or the incubator program or you in general?
Great. So all of that information can be found on our website, which is coloradomentoring.org. And so you can find everything you need to know about the mentoring program as well as the incubator there. And then all of my contact information is there as well. And I'll say that for folks who may be listening in other states and are thinking about building similar programs, I'm always happy to talk with my counterparts in other states. And so don't hesitate to reach out if your local bar or other organization are looking to build these programs. Happy to share our resources and talk you through how we've gone about building these.
Well, I will say that as often as I flog the bar associations on this program, I know that a great many people who listen are actively involved with their bar associations and really do want to see something like this flourish in their own area. So I would encourage them to reach out to Ryan because you know, there and the Chicago program are two of the best in the country.
Yeah, thank you, Neil. And we're happy to share everything. So definitely reach out.
Okay. Well, thanks so very much, Ryan, for being with us today on The Law Entrepreneur. And next time out, I'm out there in Colorado, which is actually fairly frequently. I have family in Longmont and Boulder. I will look you up and see if we can have cup of coffee.
That would be wonderful. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again.
Well, there you have it, boys and girls, another episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors for this episode, our good friends at Ruby. I can't say enough about Ruby. As you know, they've been my virtual receptionist for years now. Couldn't be happier with them. And I really urge all of you, if you need a virtual receptionist, that you give Ruby a chance. Also, Net Profit CFO, as I've mentioned before, Ryan Kimler was a guest on the program some time ago. I liked what he had to say so much, I became a client. And then after I became a client, he became a sponsor. So very happy about that arrangement. If you want to take your understanding of your financials in your law firm to that next step beyond just what your bookkeeper gives you back, give Ryan a call at Net Profit CFO. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If you enjoyed this podcast, do me the great favor of leaving a positive rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps with the opportunity for us to get in front of other people. And until next week, I wish you all the best, and we'll see you again here on Law Entrepreneur.